When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get their work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
4 seconds to go, 23-23, 52-yard attempt for Bates, left hash mark, north end zone uprights. Here's the snap, here's the spot, here's the kick, plenty of distance, and it's good. And the Texans have their hearts broken tonight, 26-23, as the Detroit Lions win as time expires. Unbelievable. Texans go scoreless in the second half. And they go home without the win. Detroit, meanwhile, 7 in a row. 19 points in the second half to 0 for the Texans.
All right, that was it. That was Mark Vandermeer on the call last night. And that was it's a fun night for a while until the second half of football games. And that's become a very, very disturbing trend for the Houston Texans. It will be unvarnished here over the next couple hours, I think. That was the second half was embarrassing last night for the offense. This is now a month they've gone without scoring a touchdown in the second half of a football game. And that was a game that was there for the taking against a really good football team. And you coughed it up last night.
A month?
A month. They last scored a second half touchdown, Seth. By the way, good morning. How are you?
Bah!
They last scored a second-half touchdown on October the 13th, which was up in New England. Remember when they played New England? Remember that time they scored touchdowns in the second half of a football game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was right. Yeah.
So that was a month ago.
Those were the days. I remember those days.
Yeah, those were fun.
Mm-hmm.
So 26-23, the final score last night, and there's a lot to dig into.
I'm having a hard time this morning because in my mind, a play that ultimately wasn't like the play that lost the game or anything, and yet I feel like just was the perfect emblem for that entire game, was Titus Howard aggressively strip-sacking his own quarterback and then courageously recovering the fumble.
Falling on the ball,
before
yeah.
disaster really could have happened, Titus recovered that fumble.
Yeah.
He went after it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of scrappiness we need on this team to cover up the errors of guys like Titus Howard.
He was swarming,
who strip-sacked his own quarterback.
He was swarming that ball.
They were watching the defense, and they're like, man, those guys are getting a lot of pats on the back for an attaboys every time they knock the ball out after CJ throws an interception or after we go 3 and out. The defense comes out, and they get an interception.
Dude.
And everybody says, hey, good job. So Titus just figured maybe that's what I need to do to get some recognition around here.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's a function of the primetime game and the minimal amount of sleep I get in these situations.
Yeah.
I'm upset today.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're as angry as I've seen you.
I am very, very upset
I haven't
today
seen
with
you this.
This
angry since that time I told you it was National Donut Day, and it wasn't. Yeah.
I was mad that day.
You were mad. You were
pretty
angry. This is even worse.
Well, you know what's worse about this? A lot of things. But as I'm looking up at the TV in our studio right now, like the national primetime game, like we are going to get bludgeoned over the head with this game. You won't be able to turn without people talking about this game on all the national platforms.
When throwing in five interceptions and trailing by 15-plus points, the last time a team won in that scenario was 1970, the Baltimore Colts.
Back
when they were an honorable franchise,
The Baltimore Colts, and they were still 16 years away from even being the Indianapolis Colts at that point.
1970 or 80? 1970.
Yeah, 1970. Yeah, like that's the thing now. That's where this offense is right now.
Yeah.
Overall and in the second half of football games, is that for the second time in 4 weeks, they are doing things that at a minimum, they defy math.
Yeah.
You know, like the Packers game defied math in a way. Like there was an 8% chance you were supposed to lose that game based on the turnover margin.
Mm-hmm.
And you found a way to lose that game. This is ridiculous last night. Like that every time the offense did something poor, that the defense would pick them up and go like that. The first 7 minutes of the second half where it was interception, like back it was a tennis match of interceptions.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest game for a while, and I could live with the weirdness until you started to realize, oh, crap, they're going to lose this game.
This weirdness is going to kill us.
It's going to kill us, yeah. And so this, I don't know what to do at this point because we're starting to bleed into an area with C.J. Stroud, and this is the part that is among many things, most concerning to me, is that especially recently with all the horrible pass protection and things like that, I could give C.J. Stroud a pass just based on what quarterback would be able to deal with being pressured 57% of the time and still function at a high level in the first half or second half, either half. C.J. Stroud was a huge reason they lost this game last night.
In the third quarter, we talk about, okay, come out and perform in the third quarter. Come out and perform in the third quarter. And C.J. threw two of the worst interceptions we've seen him throw.
It was on the first play.
Right. I mean, these aren't forced errors almost. It just feels like, man, something's not right. Yeah. First interception, the defensive player is just lurking there. And it wasn't like he was blind to him or anything. And then on the throw to Tank Dell where you could see Tank Dell come open immediately. And look, C.J. had the defensive end because the defense did realize, oh, the Texans are trying to run boots and it's working out for them. The defensive end read the boot pretty well and was in CJ's face, but it's nothing we haven't seen many times before where it was enough space for CJ to load up and throw the ball.
Well, just drop it in an area.
As open
as Tank was at the beginning of that play.
And it was like three steps leading into the throwing motion where CJ looked a little uncertain of himself in a way that I don't think he used to.
That was the play for me. They're up 23-10 at that time. They're up 23-13 at that time. Because Detroit had gone down, gotten that touchdown, missed the 2-point conversion, so it's 23-13. That interception was the play that really turned that game for Detroit, I thought. Because if the Texans, if CJ hits Tank on that play and they're up 30-13, I think they win that football game. The way the defense was playing last night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that defense was I don't think they're coughing up a 17-point second half lead.
The one thing about the second half that really hurt the Texans was the injury to Lassiter. Because at first, look, the Texans were responding to fire with fire, interception for interception, but the offense was giving them nothing at all. But then once the Lions started to be able to get traction, and there were just moments, I heard Larry and Stafford call in last night where he was screaming that D'Amico needed to blitz, blitz, blitz. I felt the same, and then I realized, he can't trust the coverage right now if he blitzes. They just, without Lassiter out there, I mean, they, Texans just cut D'Angelo Ross, who was not good but was playing heavily beforehand.
He played 100% of the snaps in two games.
Yeah, and they just cut him. So they're even down one more than they thought. Okuda, they thought, was coming back.
Right.
So and he didn't. Lassiter has to leave the game, and I think D'Amico just didn't trust that they could blitz and that the Lions were too lethal. So it did. It ended up looking like bend but don't break defense, but with all the bending and a little bit of breaking, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Against an offense that has the weaponry to overcome somebody who was as bad as Jared Goff was last night.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a strange game from this standpoint. I thought they put good pressure. They didn't sack Jared Goff one time in that game, and yet I thought they really affected him.
But at least one of the interceptions was actually a fumble. I mean, for all intents and purposes.
The Toa one.
Yeah, that so was.
I was surprised they called that a pick.
D'Amico, his arm was moving forward just as he, but yeah.
Whatever. So, the part that has me the most upset, two parts have me the most upset. One, the things that are going on with this offense in the second half of football games are things that, with a lot of franchises, necessitate some kind of change at some point. Whether it's the person calling the plays, I don't count the changes they made on the offensive line because those were thrust upon them by injury. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like you need to do something here. I don't know what it is, but you need to do something. I've never seen this before where you have an offense. This would be one thing if it was the David Culley Texans not scoring in the second half of games, where you got a bunch of journeymen, you got Davis Mills at quarterback, if it's not Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, and you're not scoring in the second half. You've got C.J. Stroud as your quarterback. I know Nico's out, but you still got some skill guys. We're talking about scoring a touchdown.
A touchdown. Touchdown.
I'm not saying you need to average 19 points a game in the second half or something like that.
Yeah, we could go through and find a lot of teams with bad wide receiving cores that have scored a touchdown in the second half in the last 4 weeks.
Yes.
It's not a really high bar to clear.
I think the other thing that has me so upset is this is such a blown opportunity for this team. You know, all the things that you and I are upset about here, that we're going to be upset about over the next couple hours, that people are going to be upset about over the next 10 hours on this station or however long after we're off the air, into the night, into the evening. That's been the tone for the last few weeks with this team, in losing 2 out of 3, in getting C.J. Stroud nearly killed. You win that game last night, and that... honestly, it's like a reset button. It all goes away. You're 7-3, and you just beat the best team in football at home. Don't care how you did it. You needed 5 picks to do it? Cool. I mean, you're operating without Will Anderson and Nico Collins. And so that's understood. Like, valiant effort, at least on one side of the ball, but such a missed opportunity for this team. And now, you know, like they have firmly settled into being in that layer of the league that is just an average football team that can compete with good teams at times and can lose to anybody.
I think, and if you go and you look at, really, in hindsight, at this season as you're rolling into it, okay, the offensive line is not getting the job done. That was the one area of the team that the Texans really didn't do a damn thing for, other than, hey, hope Kenyon's a different guy when he comes back.
Right.
That's what's frustrating about it. When you talk about, okay, what could they have done? Yeah, I know that teams don't typically trade for guards at the trade deadline. This is okay. Are you afraid to break the mold and you're just going to be the brave warriors that go out there with the same guys and just can't run the ball? Sean, it was glaring. I don't know why, and maybe it was just because they're wearing the monochromatic uniforms and a dark color, that the offensive line, it looked like boys versus men. Even as the Texans were rolling in the first half, they weren't rolling in the run game. They were getting destroyed in the run game. Joe Mixon had to fight his butt off just to get above 1 yard per carry.
25 carries for 46 yards.
Yeah, and he was at less than 1 yard per carry for a good chunk of the game. Yeah. So, and you look across the board on the offensive line, and they are just physically not capable of moving those Chicago defenders. So they're, okay, well, they're smaller and more athletic, except not really. Shaq, he's not that athletic. And Titus Howard is God knows what he is this year. Yeah. And they're physically ineffectual versus actual grown men.
Yeah, it's bad. Someone texts in, and appropriately so, because I just said, there's no way they cough up a 17-point lead if they score that touchdown to tank. Hey, Sean, they coughed up a 16-point lead. What the hell is 17 points? What I meant to say was there would have been, if they score that touchdown there, there would have been like 8 minutes left in the third quarter with a ton of momentum on their side. I don't think they cough up that 17-point lead at that point in the game, but I get it. Texter, I understand. Texter, this is what I would ask. Just please don't get super hyper literal with me like this morning.
This
is not the morning to do this with me, all right? Just so you know, I'm not in a good mood.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
So hope you all are having a wonderful commute into work today. The Texans lose last night 26-23. This stark realization is something that is something that is really bothersome to me. And also, we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans was asked a great question last night right out of the chute at his press conference. And I thought the genesis of this question is one of the reasons why we get into all these close games. We'll talk about that coming up next.
It'll be second down and 11. Next snap, 13:15 to go, first quarter, opening drive of the game. Lions have it, driving toward the north end zone. Second and 11 from the Detroit 41-yard line. Gibbs in the backfield, Goff in the gun. Two receivers wide side right. Here's the snap to Goff, looking, firing. Tipped in the air and intercepted. Texans have it at the 35-yard line of Detroit. Jimmy Ward off the carom with the pick.
Welcome back, Jimmy Ward. Petrie with the tip. They work on it daily. And Jimmy Ward with the scoop and the interception. The Texans are set up in great field position to operate their first offensive series here.
Goff's first interception since...
All right, that was Jimmy Ward with the interception early in the game. That was your five-hour energy, high-energy play of the game. Five-hour energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans.
I'm going to steal one of those five-hour energies. I'll tell you what.
I think they're there if you're watching on YouTube and Twitch. I don't know, Seth. I mean, I think they're there just for...
Oh, they're empty. Oh, they know me too well.
Are they really?
My wife does the same thing with the whiskey. So, she definitely did last night. I'm like a teenager. Brandy, where's the liquor cabinet key? Yeah, no, what are you doing?
I needed it last night, man.
She's got the werewolf instructions.
There you go.
No matter what I say, don't give me the whiskey, Brandy. Mm-hmm. All right, look, that was a high point. I thought Jalen Petrie, man, that play where Jalen Petrie tipped that ball, the beautiful thing about it was that he had the awareness and had realized he had sniffed out the play. And he wasn't zeroing in on the quarterback. He was getting in the passing lane. He's just headed straight upfield and got his hands in the passing lane.
Yep.
That was beautiful. That was a veteran savvy move there by Jalen Petrie.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, it was a sign of glorious things to come.
Those were good times. Yeah, early in the game. There were a lot of things they needed to do to win this game. They checked the box, but one of the things I had was scoring in the second half. As my keys to the game.
Touchdown, Sean? Are you being greedy or did you just want
just points? To score, just points?
Oh, you wanted points of
points.
Some sort.
I know they're going to need time to score touchdowns in the second half. I just think one of my keys to the game was scoring a point in the second half. They weren't able to do that.
Look, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
God.
If you do have your cake, Titus Howard's going to try to grab it from you.
Oh, will he?
He'll be like, give me that cake.
And then it'll fall on the ground and he'll jump on it and eat it off the floor.
Notoriously around the cafeteria, there are the sports super duper nutrition plasma center, whatever
hypo
they call
complex.
It.
Yeah.
Walking around in lab coats up in there so those offensive linemen can get their glorious physiques and strip the ball. This is what I'm more upset. I am more upset, not just the Titus. Did I already say this or not?
Who cares? Thought it. There's people getting in their cars.
Titus Howard, okay, yes, he went to strip the ball, but Why was it so hard for him to strip it? Well, you're a big man. You're 325 pounds.
To be
and
fair,
it was like, it wasn't even, it was a battle for him. He had to battle that ball out of CJ Stroud's hands.
I don't want to get too, like, to be fair, he wasn't trying to strip it. He was trying to take it away and then go do something with it. You know what I mean?
But like, CJ wasn't trying to give it to him.
No, I know. Titus is a guy who likes to take things into his own hands.
It should have been like stabbing Caesar. It should have been easy because, like, Stroud was Caesar. He didn't know it was coming.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, Brutus, how you doing? How's the wife?
Same thing.
That's what happened to CJ. You know what CJ was yesterday?
What?
Before we play some more of this audio?
Yeah.
I realized what it was and why he's starting to just not look like himself in his, how comfortable or uncomfortable he is.
Yeah.
Some of the decision making. Those were bad interceptions yesterday. He's in a toxic relationship. And he's doing it. He's been in a toxic relationship with the rest of his offense, the offensive line in particular. And you know what it's like when you're in a bad relationship with somebody, like at work or somewhere else, like somebody who's just brutal to have a discussion with. Like, even you're not trying to argue, but you offer a suggestion and they're like, that's dumb. What happens after a while? You kind of just start shutting down and you're like, I know I should say something, but I'm not talking about how he responds verbally. I'm talking in his play.
Yeah.
He's walking on eggshells trying to figure out what's the right thing to do. You know, that person that's always, because he's in a toxic relationship.
Yep.
That offensive line might as well be the person, you know, that takes everything as a criticism.
Okay.
You know, you're like, oh, I want to compliment his haircut, but I'm afraid he's going to think I'm being passive aggressive.
And
you end up not being yourself around that person.
And he's
CJ's not himself around these other people because they are toxic football players.
He's not been himself since he hit Nico Collins with that bomb in the Buffalo game, if we're being honest. You know?
When was that?
That was week 5. Yeah. It was week 5.
You sure it wasn't 2021?
It was week 5.
It feels like 2021 ago.
We're still 6-4 and leading the division. This question was asked of D'Amico Ryans last night, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Seth, because I have been adamant. I thought last year that this team's inability to put teams away in games that are very put awayable was an issue, but this is where we're learning the how expectations fuel things.
Yeah.
The Texans were 6-4 last year. Through 10 games.
That's the same way
they're 6-4 this year. But last year, there were no expectations. It was a honeymoon year. They won 3 in a row to get to 6-4. And everybody's all happy and joyous and things are great. This year, they're 6-4 and everything is caving in on this team right now. D'Amico was asked, is the winning ugly and win is a win? You know, hey, a win's a win. We hear that a lot. Is that approach backfiring when it comes to putting teams away?
And the approach each week is to go win the game, no matter how it looks. You know, we don't set out to win an ugly game, but in this league, every game comes down to, you call that final possession.
No, it
doesn't. So you have to find a way to gut those out and win. We haven't been on the winning side, you know, of those games, as, you know, Green Bay, New York, and now Detroit. So we didn't make the plays to win the game. Like, however you win, you got to find a way. And to play, to win games, you got to have guys have to step up and make plays, and that's not happening.
I hate
that plays a,
I,
that it's predetermined.
I
that,
hate.
Yeah,
I hate the answer, the mentality.
Yeah,
the false observation. If nothing else, it's not true. All games don't come down to the last couple of plays, and sometimes I feel like, when you have a coach that looks at the league, Bill O'Brien was a lot. It's an 8-8 league.
Yeah.
And what happened? You finish 9-7 every year. You know what I mean? Like, I think you can talk bad things into existence sometimes.
The games are going to come down to the wire in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Always, always, always. Even when you're up by 20 at the half.
I'm making too much. I've never been in an NFL locker room, so maybe I'm making too much of it. Look, D'Amico, he has more football knowledge in his little finger than I have in my entire body. So, like, I'm just making an observation from a human standpoint.
So, yeah.
Is that when you have leadership that is saying, and I don't know what gets said behind the scenes, I admit that as well. I'm just telling you what feels like gets said and we get beaten over the head with every week is like, oh boy, these games come down to the last play. I know it's always a play here and a play. It doesn't have to be.
This is the problem. Like, I don't, whether the mindset leads to that kind of outcome or not. The whole thing is, it's not like they were comfortable or trying to win close games. So the question, the way it was phrased, was something along the lines of, like, did you get too comfortable with winning close games?
Yeah.
I think winning those close games that they did, was more of a, it was a reflection of where their flaws as a football team were. And it was something that was going to get exposed if they didn't fix it. That's why we kept saying, okay, they got to clean this up. They got to clean this up before right. they get to the really good teams. They got to clean this up. And none of it's gotten cleaned up, and some of it's gotten worse. I'm not, by the way, I'm not like exasperated with you that I'm holding my head. I've just got to.
Oh, no worries.
This team has given me a headache. I never get headaches.
Yeah.
And now I've got a headache. Thanks a lot for the tumor.
You and I make an agreement right now. None of what's happening in the next hour and a half is on you. Like, you're not making me mad, and I'm not making you
okay,
mad.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. It's the Texans making us
let's
both
not
mad.
Let our toxic relationship with the Texans right. ruin our
it's
relationship.
It's toxic enough as it is.
Right, I'm bringing my stress home with me. I'm like, oh, Sean, I got to tell you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I kick you because I can't kick the Texans.
Exactly.
Although if I did, I'd probably make it. I'd make that field goal.
Oh, yeah.
I'd kick Titus Howard right through the goalpost, and he would go end over end, and he would just scrape the inside of it. That's the brush of the inner thigh.
That's what the Lions,
that Lions kicker, the kid from Tomball,
yeah.
he was slowly and quietly seducing our goalposts right, by touching its inner thighs.
Let's focus. So D'Amico with these close games.
You turned on.
I know.
But
D'Amico with the close, you were making a point before.
It wasn't a mindset that they were trying to win close games. It was evidence that they just weren't a complete football team.
Yes.
That you squeak. Some games where you really, based on the physical battles, should have won by 21 points. You were just squeaking them out. It was an indication that, yeah, look, it was a canary in the coal mine for these things will jump up and bite you. And mind you, because I see a lot of people, or at least some people have told me already, just like, hey, you got to remember, it was the Lions. They're a really good team, and you played them down to the wire. If they had genuinely played them down to the wire, yes, 100%. They did not. They squandered a 23-7 lead.
Right.
They slowly and surely watched the life be compressed out of them as the Lions stood on their chest in the second half.
Not all 26-23 losses on a last-second field goal are the same.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, and then just Kyme Fairbairn, what a turn of events. Where in the first six games of the season, if I would have found I would have said, yeah, kick it from 65. Let's end this thing.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore.
Yeah, he made a long one last night, but I get what you're saying. Like the one they needed to have, he duck hooked that thing into the third row. So.
We knew that. I knew it was bad off his foot.
Yeah, you know? Right. It was bad right away. Here was C.J. Stroud last night. He was asked, "How long does it take to flush a loss like this?"
I'm not sure. You know, I don't know. It's hard. You know, to lose like that, especially when our defense plays so good, and you know, we're just not scoring points at the end of the day. So, yeah, it's not easy. But, you know, can't sit here and, you know, keep our heads down. Got to keep our heads up and go back to work and get better. So, yeah, that'll be the plan.
I don't know if you watched or listened to the whole CJ press conference. That was as down as he's been in a press conference since he became a Houston Texan last night.
That,
a lot of short answers.
Yeah.
You know?
It didn't look like he was having fun.
No.
You know, the one of the things they had talked about with their little mini bye week and the 2-hour players leadership council meeting and everything. Got to get back to having fun.
Yeah.
I was on a leadership council once that told Tom Coughlin we thought he had to have more fun. Didn't go so hot. Didn't go so hot for that leadership council. I have fun when we win football games. That's my fun.
You know,
and now they've turned me into Tom Coughlin.
You know what's fun? Gassers.
The grumpiest version of Tom Coughlin. You know what, CJ? You know what's fun? Winning.
Who?
Not having your offensive lineman strip the ball away from you. That's fun.
Do you remember who had to be the one to deliver that news to him?
It might have been. Ironically enough, now current Detroit Lions quarterback coach Mark Brunell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, we had seven or eight of us, and we just met with Coughlin, and he took it well, actually.
Did he?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. No, he actually, like, we had some points for him. It was more involved than just not having
you.
Fun.
I got you.
Yeah.
I think for me, one of the things that is most disturbing, depressing, whatever adjective you want to use, is that. When you combine what the Texans are doing right now with the rest of the AFC South, all of which lost yesterday, in a season where we were, I don't want to say promised anything, the Texans didn't come out and say, hey, we traded for Stephon Diggs and we signed Danielle Hunter and we got Joe Mixon. We are going to be a Super Bowl team.
Right.
But I think expectations were that it was going to be more than what they were. Like, they made all these moves to improve over what they were last year, which was AFC South champs, won a playoff game, knocked out in the first round.
Right.
There's seven games left in the season, and I can already tell you how...
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This season is going to go.
They're
going to win 10 games.
Uh-huh.
They're going to win the AFC South.
Uh-huh.
They might win a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to get blown out on the road. If they win a playoff game, they're going to get blown out on the road in the second round.
If they win a playoff game at home
at
3 p.m. on a Saturday.
Yes.
Which it most assuredly will be.
Undoubtedly.
Right. But this version of the Texans. And that's
depressing
to me.
And
the other big question is, okay, then Bobby Slowick, and what is his future if he doesn't turn this around and fix it?
Yeah.
Now, Nico Collins coming back will make a difference. Like, all of a sudden... Coaches magically become better play callers when they have one more stud offensive
player.
This
is too stark a difference.
And I don't think they're... It wasn't like they were a machine when Nico was healthy either.
Right.
There's going to be a hard decision if it's not made during the regular season, but in the offseason, where this might be the year where D'Amico really becomes a genuine head coach when you fire one of your friends. Because I don't know if this doesn't get fixed. I mean, they're just so hopelessly inept. They just can't put a complete game together, and I don't care. Like we said, there's many other teams don't have Nico Collins on their roster right now. Many other bad football teams have scored touchdowns in the second half in the last four games.
Yeah.
And the Texans can't score a touchdown, much less even a point last night. But in the last 4 weeks, they haven't scored a touchdown
in the second half. It's unacceptable and inexcusable, and he should get fired if this keeps going on. That's not even a hot take. Like, four straight weeks without a touchdown, and you have C.J. Stroud as your quarterback?
Right. It doesn't mean the hot take becomes retaining Bobby Slowick
no
at
doubt.
That point.
Well,
that would be the hot take.
Well put. All right, headlines. We'll talk more about the Texans. We'll get you updated on everything going on around the NFL yesterday. There was one Houston team that did beat a Detroit team. That's been a...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we had one of those. So that happened. We'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
4 seconds to go. 23-23. 52-yard attempt for Bates. Left hash mark. North end zone uprights. Here's the snap, here's the spot, here's the kick, plenty of distance, and it's good. And the Texans have their hearts broken tonight. 26-23 as the Detroit Lions win as time expires. Unbelievable. Texans go scoreless in the second half, and they go home without the win.
Mark Vandermeer on the call. He's had to do a couple of those over the last few weeks. Green Bay in week 7, and now the Detroit Lions last night at NRG Stadium. 26-23, the final score. The Texans blow a 23-7 halftime lead. You can do the math. Yes, there were no points scored by the Texans. No points scored at all. Not no touchdowns. No points scored at all in the second half of that football game. I thought, Seth, the sequence in the last 2 minutes there, I think, perfectly epitomized where these two teams are at, the Lions and the Texans. Kyme Fairbairn had a chance to take the lead with a long field goal after the Texans couldn't convert on a third and four. Texans convert on a simple third and four near midfield coming out of the two-minute warning. They win this game. They run the clock. They move the ball a little bit more. Kyme doesn't have a 58-yard field goal. He's got maybe a 48-yard field goal, and I think they win the game. Simple things. Can't do it. Can't hit a third. Can't convert a third and four. You miss that field goal. Now Detroit's got the ball at midfield. What do? Easily convert a third and six to Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jake Bates scrapes paint on the side of the upright for a second time, and the Lions win the game.
I think the one part about that, that looking back on it, because I wasn't in the mood last night to make any excuses or what have you, and yet that was an egregiously missed pass interference call on third down. I don't understand how it wasn't called.
Terry and Arnold jumping on Hutchinson's back.
Right, right. And I just it must have been because the linebacker was right there too that it clouded the line of vision for the officials enough that they just couldn't tell. But I mean, that was clearly pass interference, and ended up you would have had a better shot at it. But yeah, I guess nobody, I'm not in the mood, and nobody else is in the mood to make excuses for one play in a game where you did nothing in the second
no,
half.
No, yeah, and I'm like, and that's kind of where we are with this team. Like, okay,
not to mention, it was
the go-to play on third and four is to throw it to a tightly covered Xavier Hutchinson.
That's a dicey throw to begin with, too, with the flurry of bodies that he was thrown into.
Yeah, it could have been intercepted. Here was D'Amico Ryans last night after the game, asked about the defense. Got five interceptions last night, and the Texans managed to lose this game. Five interceptions, not scoring in the second half. How do you address these second half issues?
Yeah, I'm proud of the defense for, you know, guys going out and getting five turnovers. I think that's a big day for any defense. But, you know, the thing about turnovers is, you know, what are you doing with those turnovers? And it's getting the points off of the turnovers. That's how you swing the game. And I don't think we got enough points off of the turnovers. But proud of the guys for, you know, that's a really good offense. And our guys play well. As down the stretch there, we just let some plays out that, you know, that we have to play better.
Coming out hot in the third quarter has been a point of emphasis for a while now.
Yeah.
You know, and it'd be nice to extend that on into the fourth quarter, except that first you got to start it up in the third quarter. And, man, that was as bad as it's been. And it was very much a C.J. Stroud-driven affair. And by driven, I mean not driving at all. Just throwing interceptions very, very quickly.
Yeah, this is one you can... And CJ himself did this, but there is a big part of this loss you can put on CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
Those two interceptions, it'd be one thing if the interceptions were due to some of the things we've been seeing with the offensive line over the last month or so, where CJ's just got a muddy pocket, guys draped on him, looking to get rid of the ball, gets rid of the ball, and it just gets picked off. Those were two sloppy, lazy interceptions. Like, those were awful interceptions.
They were, and we've
you're
seen
trying to grade with, how much yeah. it is on the quarterback?
I don't know, like, man. CJ, there have been some times, including, you know, earlier in the game, credit to somebody on my stream last night who'd mentioned this, because I kind of forgot about it. It was a positive outcome for the Texans, but when Xavier Hutchinson got that pass interference, it was partly credited basically due to CJ underthrowing the ball.
Yeah.
So he had to come back for it, but... CJ hitting guys deep, he just didn't have the loft on that ball that I think maybe he wanted. I don't whether it was the decision making now, leading up into the throw where he had a defensive end in his face, as you tend to do on boots, but he had some room. And I just think previous versions of CJ would have planted his foot and stepped into that throw, where CJ kind of looked uncertain about how to handle it and then had to half crank it out there, and it just, man, it was ugly. That was a bad third quarter.
It was bad.
And the first three drives, two interceptions, and they sandwiched the 1-3 and out, you know, which of course started with a run on first down where Joe Mixon got one glorious yard.
Yeah.
So they're in second nine from the get-go. That entire third quarter was just an absolute nothing offensively.
It was an abomination. It was the whole second half. It was awful. Let's get to the NFL at large yesterday. Hey, the good news, the rest of the AFC South was just as bad as the Texans were in the second half of that football game. The Colts lose to the Buffalo Bills 30-20. Joe Flacco throws three interceptions. The Minnesota Vikings beat the Jacksonville Jaguars and Mac Jones 12-7. So the Vikings beat the Jags without scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
And then the Titans lose to the Los Angeles Chargers in L.A. yesterday, 27-17. How about that? Quite the day for the NFC North against the AFC South.
No, they own us.
The Minnesota Vikings go to Jacksonville.
Congratulations.
Win a game where Sam Darnold throws three picks and doesn't generate a touchdown. They beat the Jags. The Lions come here, and Jared Goff throws five interceptions, and they win 26-23. says everything you need to know about both of those divisions, I would say.
I'm tired of the NFC North. It's been fun.
Yeah. It's over now.
Yeah, it was cool and all that. Lions fans showed up in pretty good numbers last night.
Yep.
And that's a really good football team that is managing to carry Jared Goff into numbers and statistics that he just...
Well, there was some regression to the mean last night, for sure.
Yeah. That's what I kept thinking the whole first half. I was like, yep, here you go. Yeah. Look at this. You're getting this version of Jared Goff.
Right.
You're getting this version of Jared Goff.
Still in there somewhere.
Even in the second half, they were getting the bad version of Jared Goff.
Yeah.
You know, Jared Goff didn't...
There were two more picks.
That was a David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs-driven affair.
Absolutely.
It's, man...
Cowboys lose yesterday 34-6 that to the Eagles. That is the Texans' next opponent. The Kansas City Chiefs find another way to win. They block a field goal at the gun to beat the Broncos 16-14. The Rockets, just shifting to basketball real quick. Might have been Reggie Atatula told me that apparently there was at least a media member or some Detroit people saying, hey man, we really own you guys between this game and the American League Wild Card Series.
Oh.
Boy, you guys haven't beaten Detroit in a while.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, Reggie, I hope you told that person that the Rockets beat the Pistons yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, take that.
101-99. Yeah, so suck on that, Detroit, all right? The 10th regular season NBA game of the year. It's exactly the same as the baseball playoffs and a really important Sunday night game in football.
And it was a perfect victory for the Rockets because Jalen Green melted the internet with a viral clip, a highlight, and yet also ended up
6 of 17.
It was 6 of 17. What was he on threes? He was 1 for 6
on threes.
1 for 6
on threes. Yeah.
So it was a classic. That was. Peak Jalen Green.
I feel bad.
Go.
Austin Mendez, who's our one of our on-site guys there when we're doing the pregame show, he came over to me. He's always got his phone on. He comes over to me. He's like, dude, Jalen Green just put Cade Cunningham on a poster. I'm like, oh, cool. He's like, I'll send it to you. And he sends it to me. He sends me on a tweet.
Yeah.
And I open it. And I look at it. I'm like, oh, that's a hell of a dunk. And then I open the box score. And I'm like, yeah, at the time he was 5 for 14. I'm like, okay, I'm an old head. I don't get as wrapped up in him putting Cade Cunningham on a poster as you, Austin. I'm very, very sorry. All right. Those are your headlines. 7 o'clock hour. Here we go. We're going to dig into the twists and turns from last night's game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. It's not all good, obviously. 26-23, the Texans lose last night to the Detroit Lions. And at 7:20, we will acknowledge. We got some acknowledgments to make. We do our Monday staple, Acknowledge Me. And that is coming up next. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. The Texans lose last night, 26-23. We're getting bludgeoned with the highlights on TV because it was the Sunday night primetime game. Hell of an energy.
Yeah, everybody's, hey, everybody, look at what you missed if you went to bed last night. Yeah. Fireworks in the second half. Jared Goff, did he bring him back? Not really.
Look at this. Here's the field goal. Look at that, Seth. You can see, like, it.
Yeah, that one genuinely doinked a little.
Yeah, yeah.
The first one, I'm not sure if there was any doinkage or not. Like a molecule of the ball might have hit the goalpost. The second one, it was a little mini doink. Hit a micro doink.
Yeah. Jared Goff, 5 picks last night. So let's get into this. We will go through the twists and turns from last night's game. And let's start with the first of the Jared Goff 5 picks. This was exactly the start you wanted to get off to if you were the Houston Texans.
It'll be second down and 11. Next snap, 13:15 to go. First quarter, opening drive of the game. Lions have it, driving toward the north end zone. Second and 11 from the Detroit 41-yard line. Gibbs in the backfield, Goff in the gun. Two receivers wide side right. Here's the snap to Goff, looking, firing. Tipped in the air and intercepted. Texans have it at the 35-yard line of Detroit. Jimmy Ward off the carom with the pick.
So Jimmy Ward gets the interception, sets the Texans up.
Yeah, and there was a great job by Petrie, who, man, he had a hell of a first half, especially. But
that looked like something that they saw on film.
Well, that one, right, yeah. Like, Jalen knew what the tendencies were, and instead of turning towards the quarterback, he just got right in the passing lane. You could see he just went straight upfield. So the combination of Jalen Petrie just becoming a savvy veteran who's really good in most of what they ask him to do, and last night especially, and then Jimmy Ward just being on the spot and anticipating it as well. That was great. That was great. Sign of great things to come, Sean.
Sign of great things to come in the first half.
If you were to say, hey, that's a first of 5
interceptions,
I would have said, oh wow. Did the Texans even play their starters in the fourth quarter?
Right. So that was a great start. The Texans would go on to get the ball there. 8 plays, 33 yards. Joe Mixon, goes in for a touchdown. Texans go up 7-0. They come back out, 3-and-out for the Lions. So now you're getting the ball back. Texans get the ball back at their own 43-yard line. That was when I think Steven Sims had the nice return to get him near midfield. And this was the play here where I'm like, okay, they can really, really pounce on these guys early if they can capitalize on this play. This was a 36-yard catch and run from Joe Mixon. A little short pass to Joe Mixon from C.J. Stroud that he took down inside the five.
Second down, and we'll call it 9 from the Lions' 40-yard line. Empty backfield now for C.J. Stroud, but here comes Mixon to join him in the backfield as Dell will do the same. Split backs. Second and 9 at the Detroit 40. C.J. takes the snap. Here's pressure. And a quick pass to Mixon, left side. Has a little room, 35, cutting right, 30, 25, all the way to the right sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, and down inside the 4-yard line, Arnold.
All right, so you got first and goal at the Detroit 3. So now it's like, all right, you can get a 14-0. You got a pick and a 3-and-out on Detroit's first two drives. The crowd is into it. You're on the road. First and goal at the 3, and you immediately get a holding penalty.
Oh.
On Juice Scruggs.
Oh, and one that I mean, DJ Reader maybe could have gotten in on the tackle, but it was that play wasn't killed because of DJ Reader, so it was a needless hold.
Needless hold.
I think that the outcome of that play would have been the same whether or not DJ Reader got help.
You can't hold when you're goal to go inside the five.
No,
and the 10 yards that get tacked on are a complete game
changer.
And
he got tagged with 2 holds in that game last night,
and in horrible spots.
Yeah,
you know, just in horrible spots. CJ would go on to get sacked on third down. They'd have to settle for a field goal there. So still up 10-0. Still feeling pretty good about things. But Detroit would come back. Henry Toa Toa got matched up with Sam Laporta, and here's what happened.
Goff in the gun. Gibbs in the backfield with him. Second and 5 at the Houston 20. 3 receivers wide side right. 4-man front for Houston. On second and 5, Goff fakes to Gibbs. Steps out to his right. Airs it out downfield and caught. Touchdown, Laporta. 20-yard TD pass as Detroit gets on the board.
Yeah, just way too easy.
It was way too easy, and it wasn't on a blitz or anything. Laporta just runs by Henry Toa Toa, and that was it. We didn't see that matchup exploited again in the game. And for the most part, in the first half, the pass rush was really good. But that was one you live with. I mean, at times that's what's going to happen. Your linebacker's going to get matched up with somebody, and you know, Toa Toa's not going to always lose that. But it happens. It happens.
Yep.
And in the context of everything else the Texans defense was doing in the first half, I wasn't overly distraught over
right.
that.
Right. Texans get the ball back. Well, the first half continues. The Texans tack on a couple more field goals. It's 16-7.
Yeah.
There's a lot of debate up in the press box as to how to handle the last 2 minutes of the half here. When the Lions got the ball with a little under 2 minutes to go, and they were being a little bit conservative. It looked like the Lions just wanted to go to the locker room. So on 3rd and 8, or preceding 3rd and 8, after the Lions ran Jahmyr Gibbs off the left side for a yard to set up 3rd and 8, D'Amico Ryans decided to use his second time out there with about 1:09 left. And Detroit throws incomplete on 3rd down. So now the Texans get the ball back at their own 34 with 54 seconds to go. And unlike previous drives right before the half where D'Amico looked like he was playing for field goals, they were fairly aggressive here. They were throwing here. They throw to Mechie for 9 yards. They throw to Mechie for 25 yards. So now they're down in, you know, now they're in Detroit territory. They're at the Detroit 32-yard line. So it's like, all right, they're going to come away with at least 3 points here. They hit Dalton Schultz, C.J. Stroud does, for another 17 yards. So now you're in the red zone. And a few plays later on 3rd and 10 at the Detroit 15, here you go.
3rd down and 10 at the Detroit 15. Stroud shotgun, Dari in the backfield with him. Here's the snap. CJ looking. CJ firing to the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. John Mechie. Hello, end zone. The Texans score right before the half. What a
boy, and that was a beautiful throw. I mean, that's what CJ, he is still that guy. He still made great throws in this game. He's made incredible throws over the last few weeks. The pass protection was adequate on that play. There was pressure and there was seepage, but he had a pocket and he moved to the left a little bit inside the pocket and then put the ball perfectly between the safety and the cornerback on that. It was a great throw. It was textbook. It was everything that C.J. Stroud's capable of doing when he's got other guys working well around him.
That felt like such a breakthrough moment for me for this team. That whole drive, you know, that C.J. spreading it around to, you know, Metchie had three catches on that drive.
Yeah.
Dalton Schultz, you know, with the big chain mover there. That they moved it down, that they were so aggressive when they've been so conservative at the end of halves, that they make it 23-7 at the half, and you've got the ball coming out to start the second half.
Right.
That's where I felt like, all right, this is the breakthrough game. They're gonna, you know, and you got to do some good things in the second half. But man, this what a way to go into the locker room at the end of the half with that touchdown.
Right. With even just it was frustrating in the first, you know, 1 2/3 part of that half. Because the Texans' offense wasn't really capitalizing on all these opportunities. They were, you know, they were settling for field goals. Boy, this was, all right, end of the half, go down, score a touchdown, boom. Exactly how you're supposed to do it. Yep. This is the Texans' night.
That is,
and nobody can convince me otherwise.
That's how I felt at the time, man.
I ate a hot dog. That's what I did.
Big.
That's how happy I was.
That's how you celebrated.
I ate a hot dog,
so you celebrated the Metchie touchdown.
Yeah.
So they come out of the half. Texans get the ball. And all those good feelings I had going into the half took one play for them to go away.
C.J. Stroud huddles them up. Texans lead 23-7 to open the third. Bunch formation right, one back Joe Mixon. Motion by Dell to the left side. No Nico Collins tonight. Now Stroud backs out in the gun from the 30, first down, C.J. to throw. Quick throw left side, intercepted. Diving pick. And they got it at the 32-yard line. Davis with the INT jumped the route, and Detroit, just like that, is in Houston territory.
There you go.
I'm watching the all-22 of it right now, and I don't know how CJ, what he thought that cornerback was doing, but he had outside leverage, and he's the zone corner there, and it looks like exactly what CJ should have expected to happen happened. That was bad. It was just bad.
Yeah, very first play.
I mean, he must have I'm guessing he anticipated something else, but there wasn't really anything to pull that cornerback. There wasn't like another receiver hadn't gone inside that CJ might have thought that cornerback was going to cover. That was a weird one.
Yep. You don't see that out of CJ Stroud very often.
No.
You know, just ill-advised throws like that. So this game would get weird for a while, though, because the Texans, Kamari Lassiter, would intercept a pass shortly thereafter to get the ball back at the 1 yard line. They exchanged interceptions. You know, the first handful of possessions in the second half, all interceptions for either team. The second interception for the Texans, this is C.J. Stroud's second interception. I thought this was the biggest play of the game for me. Because if C.J. Stroud just makes what we've become accustomed to being a normal C.J. Stroud throw to what was a wide-open Tank Dell, the Texans are up 30-13, and I think they go on to win this game. They'd be up 17 points with a ton of momentum, crowd into the game, with about 8 minutes and change to go in the third quarter. I think they win this game if they score a touchdown there, but it didn't happen.
Baxton and I, second and four at the Detroit 30. C.J. fakes the give. Boots out to the right, trying to set up, airs it out downfield, and intercepted, threw it late, got picked off, unbelievable, Davis again with the pick.
Can't go late, he went absolutely late, you've got to anticipate that throw, or who's going to come open, set your feet earlier, and Tank Dell is dancing all the way to Cullen Avenue if he throws it earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lazy, sloppy throw.
It was, and it is, as Andre was exactly right. I mean, from the time CJ should see that coming open, I mean, it looked like when Damian Pierce was struggling with the outside zone run game, where when he decided to cut upfield and go, he took like four steps to do it, and it was late. That's what CJ looked like. Like, he took four steps after he should have realized, oh, plant my foot and hurl this thing.
Yep.
And even after he did do it, because of the hesitancy and because there were the defensive lineman was that much closer up in his face at that point, he couldn't take a full step into it, didn't have his base set up, and he just lobs it to him. And he pointed out, as many Lions fans were keen to do last night, It's always fun when the quarterback points out his interception. You know, it's just, like before he threw it.
He's pointing. Yeah.
Basically telling the safety where to go, or telling what's his name, the cornerback, where to go. The guy that they torched last year against Tampa.
Carlton Davis.
Thank you, Carlton Davis revenge game. I got to look at his post-game comments. I'm wondering if he said anything.
He had, for those who don't remember what Seth's referring to, he was on Tampa Bay last year. He had one of the worst individual games I've seen a cornerback have at NRG Stadium.
Yeah.
On the Texans or on an opposing team. He was abysmal in that game last year. He was, again, he was one of the differences in that game last night.
I don't look at anybody. He was born in 1996.
Okay.
December 31st, 1996.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no excuse that well after the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was already a cultural
icon. Oh, you're wondering if he's named after him.
Okay. No, I don't think he was named after him, but you can't name your kid Carlton after Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
No.
Ever. There's just not too much, I don't know.
It's not hip.
Yeah, it's
at all.
And yet there he was, Carlton, kicking our ass, doing his goofy little dance.
Two great picks, man. Two great
Carlton.
Picks by him. Yep. So the second half will go on. There's no real highlights to play for Texans scoring because there was no scoring for the Texans in the second half of this game. The last two highlights I'm going to play, one is a Texans on offense highlight, air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
The other is a play that I think epitomized the difference between these two teams last night. I'll start with the first one. Texans are up 23-20. So you would hope that the offense kind of gathers themselves. They're getting the ball back with about 11 minutes to go in the game. And, hey, guys, you know, we've let this thing, like many games in the past, we've let this get a little too close again. Let's make this different. On national TV, let's go get a touchdown. You know, let's go make this a two-score game again. So the Texans get the ball at their own 30 to start. This was right after David Montgomery had scored the touchdown to make it 23-20. And they get to their own 47-yard line. And from there, they get to 2nd and 15. There was a Cade Stover false start. 3rd and 10 at the Houston 47. And here's what happened.
So it's 3rd down and 10 from the Houston 47. Play clock down to 8. Here's Stroud in the gun with one back. Three receivers left.
Got two man here.
Stroud gets the snap. CJ with pressure. CJ scrambling out to the left. Now back to the right. Runs into Titus Howard. Ball comes out. Somebody's got a fall on it. Texans have it inside their 35-yard line. A disaster on 3rd down.
Titus has got to stop watching and quitting on plays, watching the action when he gets himself beaten. That's what happens when you just stop and start watching and somebody's still playing. You're trying to get out of the way. You run right back into him.
It looked like Titus almost pulled the ball out trying to pull.
It happened, Mark. It happens way too much.
It was, and he did. And that was before they had seen the replay that showed Titus Howard actively stripping the ball from C.J. Stroud. He thought, oh, C.J.'s dishing me the ball. C.J. tried to hold on to the ball.
Yeah, C.J.'s just
poor
trying
ball
to,
security,
he's
C.J.
He's trying to go down and let the team punt.
You got to understand that your offensive linemen are going to be aggressively swatting at that ball. It looked like they were doing a practice drill.
Dude,
you know, like, hey, try to swat the ball out of C.J.'s hands.
Obviously, Titus was trying to rip the ball out of his hand so he could, you know, take it and run with it, I guess.
Rumble for glory, I guess.
Have you envisioned in your mind what that would look like if Titus Howard were able to take that ball from CJ and then turn upfield and start running?
The worst possible outcome would be if it actually worked. That would embolden him to try more nonsensical stuff like that again in the future.
How far do you think Titus could make it?
I feel like he had a flashback to back when he was a quarterback.
That's the only explanation.
You know, and it's like, yeah, in his mind, he was going to find somebody. And like if he threw the ball downfield, there wouldn't be an illegal offensive lineman downfield. Titus Howard himself, you know what he should have done? Should have stripped it from CJ, and then Titus himself would have found a way to hold somebody as he threw the ball. He would get credit for the strip sack, the fumble recovery, the pass attempt, but also the holding that negated the pass attempt.
Dude, just brutal. Just absolutely brutal. All right, one more play. We get the music going again, Byron? We got the music. I need the mood music this morning, dude. Yeah, thank you.
It lifts me up.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Last play, and I thought this epitomized the difference between these two teams last night is that the Texans needed to kick a field goal and convert a 3rd and 4 to win this game. They didn't do either. The Lions needed to convert a 3rd and 6 and kick a field goal to win this game. They did both. This was the 3rd and 6 to set them up in field goal range.
All right, here's Vinovich to tell us something. No, Detroit huddling up. 23-23, 1:40 to go, fourth quarter. Detroit with a third down and six at the Houston 48-yard line. Here's Goff in the gun, bunch formation right. He has Gibbs to his left on third and six at the Houston 48. Here's the snap to Goff. Goff with time over the middle. Got a man, St. Brown, and he's down to the 37-yard line, tagged by Aziz with 1:33 to go.
And the Texans, obviously the Lions, will go on to kick a field goal shortly thereafter and win the game. I was thinking about this, like the aggressiveness of Dan Campbell that you and I had talked about throughout the week, where he's not afraid to fake punt.
Right.
He's very aggressive on fourth downs and things like that. We didn't see... Probably the biggest example we saw of that was when he decided to kick the game-tying field goal from 58 yards.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought for sure they were punting there.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided to kick a field goal from 58 yards, and he was rewarded for that.
I mean, there was a potential fourth down situation there where they got a generous spot at the second in the fourth quarter, but credit Dan Campbell for just going out and playing their game. I think that's... Maybe when you start to try to do something desperate like that, or, you know, Campbell just does it not out of desperation, but does he's aggressively wired. I think it's a little bit of a vote of confidence for your quarterback. Mm-hmm. You're saying also, you know, when your quarterback gives up an interception at the end of the half on a Hail Mary, there's a little bit of self-sacrifice in there. A lot of quarterbacks might have just tried to, run it, like, just to errantly throw it or what have you. That goes on the chart. His five interceptions, really, it was four interceptions. And really, you could almost call one of them a sack, the Denico Autry strip, like just as the arm was coming forward. Yeah. But it's a vote of faith in your quarterback that despite all of this going wrong, listen, we don't need to bail you out with trickery. We're just going to beat him on the football field, which is what they ended up doing.
Yep. I'm guessing there was zero panic in that locker room, even when they were down 23-7 at the half. That's a really good football team. The Detroit Lions. All right, so that's our run back through that game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. Let's acknowledge some big performances from over the weekend. If you want to text in some acknowledgments, I'm willing to take a few on the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. All right, the Texans lost last night, but I do feel like there are a couple of Texans acknowledgments that we need to get to. One is, first one is John Metchie.
Acknowledge me.
Best game of his career.
Yeah.
Five catches, 74 yards, touchdown to close out the first half. And look, man, they're going to get Nico Collins back here pretty soon, but they have no Stephon Diggs. If John Metchie turns into option number three with a Tank Dell Nico Collins offense, CJ Stroud figures some things out and stops doing some of the things he was doing last night.
Yeah.
This would be really nice. John Metchie was a second-round pick. If he starts living up to that, or even close to it, that's a real nice development for this team. But in the moment, I'm really happy that he had the game that he did last night on national TV.
Yeah, I heard you guys interview with him in the post game. I was happy for you guys that you got John Metchie because in a game like that, it's hard to necessarily get somebody who, even if they had a really good game, it's a weird vibe. Where with John Metchie, I think you can separate the individual performance from the team and say, all right, look, this is a really cool thing that a guy that's had a really tough road was able to be a part of and didn't end up in a victory, but it wasn't for lack of effort or production by John.
You're reading my mind. As that game was slowly slipping away, I'm like, all right, we need somebody who's still going to be in good spirits.
I was glad you didn't get Jalen Petrie, because I would be afraid that Jalen Petrie might be the defensive player, just not because he's Jalen Petrie or anything, but just the defensive player that at some point might break and be like, well, how long do you expect us to hold up? We can't keep covering up everybody's errors all the time.
That would have been incredible.
Yeah.
Petrie was the second choice to be on the postgame.
Right. Yeah, no, and it would have been... Petrie wouldn't have said that.
No, he wouldn't.
But I worry that with any defensive player, there might be a little bit of a seepage of discontent from within.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. I know it's acknowledged me, but as long as you're bringing it up, like, this is bad with the offense in the second half of these games.
Right.
The defense has continued, and this isn't something... This is not something that has been this phenomenon over the last 4 weeks where they haven't scored a touchdown in the second half of games, the Texans offense. The defense has bailed the offense out all year long.
The defense is basically like their coworker that they rely upon is a heroin addict.
Yeah.
And boy, he's awesome when he's there. and he's sober and all of that. But boy, oh boy, when he just when he falls off the wagon, that's what happens in the second half. They're like, oh, they did heroin in the locker room
right.
again. Great.
And eventually
great.
You resent guys doing yeah. heroin when they're your coworker.
Even though, yes, even though you're trying to remember, look, the guy's got issues. You know, he's got a problem, and I got to remember that. But after a while, it just gets to the point where you can't help it.
Right.
It's ruining your life.
Yep.
I might as well be addicted to heroin at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to work on that this afternoon. Listeners, tell me.
Developing an addiction?
Where's the best heroin shop in town? Is that legal yet? Right. What the hell's going on?
Okay.
I thought there were going to be changes.
I was told. okay, real quick text. Real quick text to the 5-Hour Energy fan line. The non-call on the pass interference on 3rd
yeah.
and 4 killed us.
Yeah.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
That did not kill you. That was a bad call or a bad non-call. What killed you was not scoring in the second half of football games.
Right. Oh, did you expect
that's to- what killed you. You're an excuse maker.
Yeah, don't worry. What part of the Texans in the second half made you feel that they would have done a damn thing with
right.
converting that first down?
Well put.
I don't know if Kaimi would have made that field goal from 25 yards.
Yeah, and Texter, I'm sorry, I don't mean to take it out
Sean,
on you.
Sean, you're brutally assaulting that Texter.
I'm so mad today. I'm so angry
you
today.
Your heroin.
I am so, I do. I'll go with you. I mean, if somebody texts you where to get some, I'll go with
Byron's
you.
Filling in as a producer today, and he says that I'm very popular with his church group, his Bible study group, and I'm like, oh, gosh.
Hold on, Byron, get on the microphone.
Byron, I feel
what's
like,
up?
Yeah. You need to tell me, start texting me whenever anybody in your Bible study group thinks maybe I pushed it a little too far.
No, I got you.
Okay.
Next time.
They know
I'll
that I'm speaking, you know, not literally about being a heroin addict
right.
or going out and trying to score.
I'm going to acknowledge your Bible study group, Byron.
Yeah. I know.
Coolest Bible study group of all time.
I do. Whenever I push it with, like, the football gods or something, there's always somebody, like a pastor will text in and be like, hey, guys, everybody's got to lighten up a little bit. You know,
right.
Obviously you're not, you don't literally worship the football gods. They
right.
know that I'm not lighting candles in some altar at home.
Yeah, right.
As far as they know.
let's acknowledge Jimmy Ward.
Yes.
Acknowledge
Henry
me.
Toa Toa.
Acknowledge me.
Mar Lassiter.
Acknowledge me.
And Kalen Bullock.
Acknowledge me.
Those are the four guys that got the picks last night. Defense did their job, man.
Mm.
Turned the ball over. Turned the hell over out of the Detroit Lions last
and
night.
And by the way, I'll acknowledge... Boy, Kalen Bullock especially just in the that was not a good look on. I don't know if you saw on tele. I watched the second half on TV over at KHOU.
Yeah.
When it wasn't Bullock, Lassiter. Boy, I'm losing it. When Lassiter left the game with his concussion.
Oh, yeah, with Jimmy Ward?
Yeah. When Lassiter left the game.
Jimmy
he was,
went helmet to helmet.
And but when he left the game, when he was walking through to the tunnel, it looked, and I don't think at that point they'd reported that it was a concussion. It just looked like he was almost like convulsing or something. Mm. Like he was hunched over with his arms around, like hugging himself
yeah,
with his head
good,
down.
Man.
Yeah.
He's so key to what they
scary.
Do.
You know, and that's the absence of Lassiter after he went out. It made it really, really hard to blitz.
Yeah.
And I think that D'Amico at that point, I know that people are going to accuse him of playing bend but don't break, but then ultimately breaking. I do think their hands were tied a little bit on how aggressive they could be with the guys that they had out on the field who could or could not play man defense or be trusted to play man.
Yep.
So apologies to anybody that got alarmed about Kalen Bullock's health. I was thinking of Lassiter.
Oh, he's fine.
Brain.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Lassiter, yeah, dude, that was, friendly fire. Jimmy Ward got him, but boy, it looked like Jimmy Ward was going in. Like he was trying to tackle Kalen Bull Kamari Lassiter.
Jimmy Ward's the version. There are linebackers like that who, it doesn't matter as a defensive tackle. You're like, these guys don't care what they hit. They're going to hit something.
It's Jimmy Ward.
And, yeah, Jimmy Ward is that guy. He's like a linebacker who's going to come up and hit something, which is admirable in a lot of respects. But every now and then you get friendly fire.
Friendly fire. And that's a tough one, man. Like, that's... Oof. All right.
Stress ball isn't doing crap for me.
Are you still stressed?
I'm still stressed. My headache went away, though, so maybe it's got something to it.
All right, well, that's good. Keep doing your thing.
Squeeze your balls, everybody.
If
you're stressed out over this, just go ahead and get yourself a
Is your Bible study group listening right now, Byron?
I don't know. I haven't texted them.
Okay, yeah, find out.
I would advise going out and getting blue balls and squeezing them.
Okay.
This is what I have right here. It's a blue stress ball.
He has a blue ball, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a blue ball.
It's a Mix 96.5 stress ball.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Jalen Milroe.
Acknowledge
Katie's
me.
Own. Boy, that was fun this weekend. Have you watched any college football this weekend? Alabama. And that was fun for me. I know there's a lot of LSU people out there that were very disappointed in the outcome of that game. Me, I root against Brian Kelly every chance I get. 42-13 was the final score.
With the tiger in attendance. Ooh.
Yeah, yeah, that's very disrespectful.
Animal, now I know what the animal cruelty people were concerned about.
PETA had to be
angry.
They're
like, we've got no problem with the cage or anything like that. It's that you're subjecting him to this.
Jalen Milroe had 12 carries for 185 yards in that game.
Mm.
He had a 39-yard touchdown in the first half.
Mm.
He had a 72-yard touchdown in the second half.
Ooh.
And LSU, who was coming off of a bye week last week, leading into this game, got run off the field at Tiger Stadium. Here's Brian Kelly after the game.
If you're watching the game, you're like, what did these guys do for 2 weeks? Like, we have a scheme to stop the quarterback. We did not get that done. So I take responsibility for it.
All right, so Brian Kelly taking responsibility. I don't know what they do there. He's in year three. He's winning games. He's doing what he did at Notre Dame. He's going to win 9 or 10 games this year, but he's going to lose all the ones that matter.
Right, right. He hasn't even won all his games yet either. That will remain proverbially true.
Oh,
yes.
My God. He said that when he got introduced as head coach of that basketball game, and I haven't even won all my games yet.
You're cheering for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Listen, for anybody unacquainted with Sean.
Family.
Sean T. Pendergast, he's a Golden Domer.
Yeah.
And that's where his hatred of Brian Kelly
comes
from.
Which probably fits better in the petty cast.
There was something, Sean, I have to confess this to you. I want this offensive line to be tougher and grittier. There was a moment last night when Blake Fisher was out there, and I like Blake Fisher. I think he's got a lot of upside. He's still a bit of a project.
Yeah.
I like Jarrett Patterson.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the opposite of like how, you know, really, to win a Super Bowl, it's ideal to have at least one Samoan offensive lineman. I also feel that to have a good offensive line, a tough and gritty offensive line, might be hard to do with two Notre Dame guys on the offensive line. I don't know.
About?
I just like, feel
They're
like,
a
okay,
factory.
Where are you going to go to take me to some meeting for my 401k or something? But I don't need this many fancy lab nerds out there.
I'm doing some research today now. I'm going to find out all the Notre Dame. I can't believe what I'm hearing right now.
It was like when we had too many Stanford guys on the team. It was like, all right, okay, one Stanford guy is enough. But come on, we had like three at one point.
I don't know whether to take that as an insult or a compliment. Like on the academic side, I'm like,
yeah.
We're Stanford.
No, but I don't think both of Jarrett Patterson and Blake Fisher both have the potential to be the right kind of guys.
Yes.
A tougher, grittier bunch than the offensive line as it's currently comprised.
Got that right. The Colorado Buffaloes.
Acknowledge
I am willing
me.
To eat crow.
Yeah.
Nobody's been
Good.
More critical of Coach Prime than me. But they go into Lubbock and they're trailing at halftime in that game, but they win. They beat Texas Tech. They are 7-2. And thanks to Kansas's upset of Iowa State, Colorado now controls its own destiny to play in the Big 12 championship game. And if they win that, they're in the college football playoff. They might make the college football playoff anyways if they keep winning games.
Right.
So that's a good football team.
That it is a good football team with a coach that was very polarizing last year just because he was so damn bombastic about a team that hadn't genuinely done anything.
Yeah.
And this year, this weekend, Saturday felt like the point at which everybody had, I think a lot of people had to acknowledge and recognize, like, okay, yes, he's genuinely doing something of substance this year.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn impressive. He's got a couple of the best players in the country, but he's doing the most with them. Literally the most, because one of them's playing like 90 snaps a game.
Yeah,
so.
Travis Hunter.
So, yeah, credit to, good job.
Colorado Buffaloes, man. I got to acknowledge.
Have people been up in your mentions with receipts
Not at all.
Or anything?
No, they haven't. It's weird. Colorado's a weird thing.
Well, because Colorado fans flipped on him, too, in the offseason.
A little
so they've
bit.
All got their own receipts.
And he hasn't, it's been a month and a half since we've had a soundbite from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
what
they've turned into is just your garden variety, above average, good college football story.
It's kind of like he's worked into the golden years of Stalin, I think, where, you know, Stalin had killed enough of the intellectuals and writers and everything off that for a while there weren't any issues. That's
same
right.
Exact
he's
thing.
Just he banned enough people from his press conference that he just goes in and probably he's got his lackeys that he can kind of tell what to write and everything's
all
cool.
Oh, that is true. Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Banning. They can't ask questions. All right, last one. Didn't know who this guy was until yesterday. He's the interim head coach of the New Orleans Saints. His name is Darren Ritzy.
Acknowledge me!
Saints win yesterday. They were 2-7. They had won their first two games of the year. They lost 7 in a row. They fired Dennis Allen. This Ritzy character. Now, I'm going to admit, I have not listened to this cut yet. I've only seen the tweets. with some transcripts of it on here, but I'm like, you know what? This feels like I need to acknowledge this quote, this cut from Darren Ritzy, interim head coach of the New Orleans Saints, talking about his first day on the job and how cool it felt to win a game.
No, man, I'm a pretty open guy, so this is how my day started. I get down here to the stadium, get down here to Superdome, I go in the head coach's locker room, which, you know, I've never used before, right? So here I am early in the morning, I go to the bathroom, and this is how my day started. I clog the toilet. And I'm like, this is going to be a crappy day, pun intended. And so we listen. I'm like, okay, this is not really a great start to the day. Here we go. And so, yeah, I'm not really feeling like a head coach of an NFL team right now. So I'm like, really? This is really how we're going to start my day? So, listen, there was moments during the game. You know, I'm so wrapped up in the in my routine. There was moments today where, like, I'm almost forgetting. I'm just going through my routine, and I'm kind of forgetting that that I'm the head coach a couple times. All true.
Okay, now this would be my advice.
Yeah.
If I were Darren Ritzy's agent, I would say, if you want to be a head coach in the NFL someday,
yeah,
stop being so honest.
Right. Don't be graphically honest about certain topics.
Graphically honest about your whatever bathroom situation.
Yeah. You had.
And then being so honest about how frazzled and nervous you were throughout the
just
game.
Just inept you were at yes, times, remember? Yes. It'd be like a surgeon coming out of the operation and talking to the family and be like, I'll tell you what, he's alive and apparently thriving? Big surprise to me, because honestly, I didn't know what was going on in there. I was just hacking.
I mean, in a football
sense.
I was
just hacking and suturing anything I could see. Dude, and lo and behold, he's alive.
In a football sense, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how he did it, you know? Atlanta's a good football
team. Okay, and everything was cool.
That's a hell of a tumor I had to remove.
Just as a warning, I forgot to wash my hands, okay? So, you know, we'll keep an eye on him. We'll keep an eye on him.
Dude,
but
clogging the toilet and then crappy day. Pun intended.
I love him.
Him. He's your guy?
It was, remember when Cully was first basically doing,
yes,
he was an interim coach, but named the coach,
right?
And hired beforehand. Remember when he had forgotten his challenge flag?
Yes.
And one of the first games, it was a nice, endearing story at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
But then his stories like that continued to mount up about various things. The worst. Let's relive some other misery for just a brief moment.
So we can appreciate where we are right
when
now.
When at the end, it was, I believe it was on the final coaches show that David Cully did with Mark and John.
Yeah.
When he was talking about things that he'd learned during the season, and this is a guy who'd been in the NFL for decades, right, was a passing game coordinator for the Ravens in a year where they passed for like 4 yards. The guy that had been in the league for decades said one thing that he learned was that sometimes you can go faster tempo to provide a spark on offense.
All right.
And I'm like, what the hell?
I'm glad you're bringing this up,
yes,
today, because now I'm like, okay, they lost to the Lions last night. They're a disaster in the second half of,
yeah,
football games offensively, but it's not that. At
right,
least,
right.
You know what I mean?
And now, at least with New Orleans, that's a genuine. I like the relatability of it, him telling a real guy story, but it feels,
yeah,
feels kind of like that interim coach up in Cleveland. The Baker Mayfield wanted to keep.
Oh, Freddie Kitchens.
Remember? That was like, hey, this is the guy I want to drink a beer with.
I could totally see.
This guy is a fit for the city. This is the guy.
Definitely see Freddie Kitchens bragging about clogging the toilet, for sure. All right, that was Acknowledge Me. We acknowledge big performances, really big performance from Darren Ritzy in the bathroom.
He did, yeah, good for him.
Huge performance by him.
He's either getting a lot of fiber or not enough.
Yeah,
one or the other.
Roger Goodell wants to take this thing super global. I need to pick a travel destination for us next year. We'll do that. We'll wrap things up. We'll hand it over to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. We'll do that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast, a few minutes left here. Roger Goodell, before the Germany game yesterday, he's the commissioner of the National Football League.
Hmm.
Makes a lot of money. He's very wealthy.
The guy in the suits, is that him?
He's kind of casualed it up.
Oh, that's
a little
true,
bit
he
more.
Is. He's trying to be the casual granddaddy.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
So he was kind of he was dressed down a little bit at the Germany game, the game in Munich yesterday morning between the Panthers and the Giants. Germany, you're welcome for us exporting Panther and Giant football to you.
Yes, it was like another, we gave you another Treaty of Versailles. It was just, here you go. Yeah. You should be happy with this, right? Yeah. Everything will be all cool.
There you go.
And no, we're sowing the seeds for the Third World
War.
They
even got overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, not much. They fumbled the ball, the Giants did, on the first series.
This is the problem. Back in the early days, when we were trying to expand over to Europe and could become more global, most European football fans didn't know what they were watching. So, like, all right, that was whatever. They don't know any better. They cheer for the field goals and everything. There are a boatload of super knowledgeable European
they
football.
Know more now.
We had one of our Texans fans at the game last night.
Dennis from Hungary. He's from Budapest.
Budapest.
Yeah.
Dennis knows what he's talking about.
Oh, yeah, he does.
If he goes to a game in Germany or in London, like, he knows if he's watching crap.
Yeah.
And that's what we're giving him now.
You're giving me Bryce Young and Daniel Jones. Don't feed this to me and tell me it's filet mignon.
And now we're forcing it on him now. It's a damn opium wars. Yep. We're like, no, you will consume this.
Right. So that was,
you bastards.
So it was Germany yesterday. And you know what? I should be the bigger man again, like I was with Colorado. Let me acknowledge Bryce.
You're huge.
Let me acknowledge Bryce Young real quick.
Acknowledge me.
Won two games in a row for the first time in his career.
Boom.
Right. Roger Goodell sat down with Colleen Wolfe of the NFL Network yesterday morning, and they've got big plans for international stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely going to Spain.
Okay,
announced that. We expect to return to Mexico City.
Okay.
We expect to return to Brazil.
Ooh.
We will certainly be back in the UK.
Love that.
And we're also looking at the potential of another game in the UK area, in Ireland, possibly.
What?
Yes.
In Ireland?
That's a possibility.
All right. So Dublin, Ireland getting tacked on. Now, of those, and I'm going to throw Germany in there, too, because that's where they were doing this interview from. I'm going to assume Germany is still in the mix here. I believe in that interview at one point he also said their expectation is to have 8 international games a year, which is fun on a couple of levels. Most of all, it's fun if you're a football watcher. This is several games you're going to get to watch at 8:30 in the morning over breakfast. That was fun for me yesterday. You and I don't get to do that. Typically, we're doing the pregame show for the Texans while a London or Germany game is going on. Man, that was fun to sit down in front of the TV with a little breakfast and watch a little football at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it was Bryce Young and Daniel Jones.
That is nice. That is. I don't even know what can you Google right now, what time is it in Singapore?
Yes.
Because that's the one that I'd love to see him go over to Asia. Figure out which country in Asia is most likely to really, or like who's got the highest NFL fan base.
It's 9:49 p.m.
Okay.
Right now.
So
on
we
Monday.
Can get, so if they played a night game over there, we could have football at, like, you know, 7 a.m., 6 a.m.
kind of,
in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be hell, traveling across the international dateline in the middle of a season. I feel like the NFLPA would have words, but it would be fun. I think it would be fun. As somebody who's a fan of a team that has grown an international fan base with the Rockets, with the Astros, it's kind of nice having all of these people from foreign lands that,
Eight games is a nice even number because it's 16 teams.
Yeah.
So, like, I think the thinking is
everybody can have an international.
Every
game.
Other year, you'll have an international.
Yeah.
Game, right. So, of all those places Goodell just listed, let's pretend for a second that we found a sponsor to send Payne and Pendergast to the game. Which one would you most want to go watch the Texans play? Of all those places, I'll list them again for people in their cars. Mexico City.
Okay.
Spain.
Ooh.
Brazil. London.
Mm.
Dublin, Ireland.
Yes.
I'm going to say he didn't list Germany there, but I'm going to assume Germany's still in the mix here moving forward.
What was the one you said before Dublin?
London.
London. Okay.
Yeah.
Ireland sounds appealing just because I've never been and I'd like to go. But Brazil still holds that appeal to me.
You're a Brazil guy.
I am. I am. That's what people have always said.
Yeah.
It was like you were born in Brazil.
Yeah.
There's
the wax and everything.
It's like you pulse. Yeah. Like you've just got this. Yeah. I could just see you up dancing half naked
at Carnival.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's what people have always said about me.
Yeah.
So I think, it's a fit. It's a fit.
Brazil would be your. Mine would be Dublin just because, one, that's my homeland. I've never been before.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Irish.
One thing they love when you go to Ireland is telling everybody, hey, I'm Irish. Yeah, they love that. You should do that.
Should I?
And they'll be like, no, you're not.
It's the only thing worse is if I told...
Welcome back, the conquering hero. Woo!
The only thing worse would be is I told the truth, which is I'm half Irish,
Yeah.
But that would be fun. There's no language barrier either. I'm very impatient when it comes to language barriers.
Well, okay, it's hard to understand Irish people speaking English, but It is.
It's definitely hard for me to understand German people speaking German.
You're right, right. But it's not that far off. If you, depending on who you're talking to, anybody from the UK, good luck. You know,
yeah,
if
true.
It's, yeah, unless they went to the finest boarding schools, it's a tough listen.
So you're Brazil, I'm Dublin in this yeah. whole thing. Gotcha. All right, so boy, people are angry on this text page, boy. They are picking out their bits and pieces from this game yesterday.
Yeah, we probably haven't just spent enough time railing into them. You know, you did a post-game show immediately afterwards, and then we both got very little sleep last night, and you come in thinking, all right, I don't want to completely fly off the handle and lose my mind because I don't know how well I'm functioning right now. But look, this is an abomination. You contrast what the Texans have done over the last four games, where they've lost three of four games, and then you look at the depth chart with or without Nico Collins and Will Anderson. Like, because that doesn't. This team has been underperforming all year long. They were operating like a 500 football team as they amassed that impressive start, and yet, like, this is evidence that, yeah, that's what they are, including. Okay, it came down to a field goal versus the Lions. That doesn't tell the story.
No.
It was a complete non-performance in the second half for 2 weeks in a row now. They've showed up and in the second half completely fallen apart. I give the defense a little bit more of an excuse last night because, yeah, the injury to Lassiter did hurt. And I'm not making excuses for injuries, right? But it happened within the game, and I think it changed what D'Amico Ryans could and could not do. And that also, I mean, the offense comes out in the third quarter yet again, doesn't just not score in the third quarter, but they throw two interceptions yeah. in the third quarter. The defense bails the offense out both times after those interceptions. And yeah, the dam's going to break eventually against a team like the Lions. Yeah. This offense is just a nightmare.
Yeah.
There's just nothing about this. There's other teams in the league. Before you say, well, Nico's been injured. Do you know how many other teams in the league don't have a Nico Collins caliber wide receiver, and yet in the last 4 weeks they've scored a touchdown in the second half?
Yes.
Did the Panthers score a touchdown in the second half?
I'd have to go look.
Probably. Yeah, that's what I'll say.
Probably.
Sometime in the last 4 weeks, I'm sure they have.
I'm guessing they have too. All right, Seth, antibodies to you.
Why?
Why
are we going?
We got to go. We got to hand things over.
All right, okay, bye. Oh, good. I'm excited to hear John and Mark on this.
I am too.
I want to hear John's breakdown of
breakdown.
All this.
Breakdown, yep. All right, so we are done. We are out of time. We'll hand things over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. It's a Texans Monday on Texans Radio. Keep it tuned here all day long. In the Loop at 10, The Drive at 2. And we got Monday Night Football tonight, Dolphins and Rams. So keep it tuned here all day.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.